Blog Talk Radio.
Thinking it doesn't get worse, and more of this BS comes out.
Yeah, it just keeps heaping up on you, and heaping up and heaping up. I mean, this latest thing with the convention was beyond. I was really surprised. They totally ignored Trump's speech and the stuff that came out of the convention regarding Obamacare.
The mainstream media really didn't mention.
No, they.
At all.
Yeah, well, you're right. Some media did. I mean, the Times had pretty balanced reporting. New York Times, the Los Angeles Times covered that very well because they were, it was in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And, you know, the shame of it is, as usual, we had this discussion, and it's just very frustrating that the mainstream press doesn't cover this stuff because, you know, some interesting and potentially positive things came out of that convention and could help.
Yeah, it would have been nice to hear something on the news on TV, for instance, even if it wasn't a...
Yes, agreed.
You know, mention would have been pretty nice.
Yeah, and that just shows you, though, the mainstream media is bought and paid for, so...
Yeah.
It is
bought and paid for by the folks who want to destroy the labor movement.
Yeah.
Yep, and
I have to ask you though,
yeah.
I don't understand this, but all of a sudden this Obamacare thing has
yeah.
seemed to really cripple you guys, and I just don't understand why this wasn't foreseen by the unions and by anybody.
Couple of answers there. I mean, first of all, the I'm not sure it crippled the unions. I mean, the mainstream press, but the right wing press seized on the Obamacare debate to say that unions are suddenly realizing Obamacare is a bad thing, and that's exactly what did not happen. At the convention, it's a real distortion. There was debate and discussion. However, the AFL-CIO actually, and it came around a resolution that was submitted that essentially reaffirmed support for the Affordable Care Act and urged labor unions to work on the fixes and tweaks that are necessary. And, you know, and in some ways that discussion is no different from when Social Security and Medicare came into being and there were debates about how to fix that. And, you know, so I want to emphasize that you know, the what convention delegates, what emerged from the convention was a resolution to continue supporting Obamacare with the understanding that the only way we're truly going to fix the situation is to have single-payer health care. But until we get to that point, then the unions need to work to fix some of the problems that are germane to the Americans for the Affordable Care Act, and there are problems. I'm happy to discuss them with you. There are issues. Workers who say, you know, do what Lila does. People who work in elementary schools and public schools, folks who are, you know, under 30 out. Employers are going to start pushing people. They're going to hire people or reduce them to under 30 hours. There's a fear that that's going to start happening. Because the employers don't want to, have people on their health plan. So, you know, there's that issue. There's this thing called the Taft-Hartley funds. They're multi-employer, collectively bargained plans. There's some impacts there. So, you know, again, we want.
You know, I gotta laugh at the Walmart program. I mean, you know. Now they're talking. Oh, we it's very difficult to work with part timers. We need full time. You know, we realize that. But their entire thing was to throw people on Medicaid and government health care. Now the government's giving them a credit for it. Imagine that tax credit for allowing them to be. I mean, who is Obamacare helping? You know,
Look, again, you know, this is
the
folks who are exploiting, you know, the some of the weaknesses of Obamacare, the people who don't want to, they're the people who want to destroy unions, they're the people who don't want anybody to have health insurance. You know, it's the Walmarts, you know, the family's worth $6 billion. So, you know, I'm not buying the crocodile tears. You know, again, we represent, for example, you know, paraprofessionals. We represent school nurses and other public employees. We do not, I repeat, we do not want to see people have their hours cut to the, you know, to the under 30 hours a week threshold, because that's, you know, that's the threshold after which the ACA requires employers to provide affordable plan, or else they pay a penalty. So employers, so that's one of the concerns we have. Another concern we have is the so-called excise tax on Cadillac plans, which I think is, you know, a misnomer. But we, you know, the good news is we, because of the deal we bargained, the agreement we reached, bargained through hard bargaining on the state employee side, and there's such a strong emphasis on prevention, we don't think we're going to have to get hit with that excise tax. But, you know, it's a penalty that employers would pay essentially for offering good health care. So we're going to fix those things.
Yeah, no, the hypocrisy of that is so blatant when it comes to the point where, nobody in government, is going to get that penalty, all right? No, you know, they're exempt to Obamacare, all
right?
So, I mean, the whole thing is just so absurd, Larry.
But again, I would, you know, but if you're saying you'd rather have no Obamacare, I would disagree because there's been a 2% increase, actually, in Americans who are covered because since the ACA was legislated, due to the under 26 kids under 20, you know, have to be covered up till 26, and due to the pre-existing conditions. So, I mean, I agree. You know, there's a lot to complain about, but you're almost getting caught up in the right wingers' argument that, you know, we should do away with this because what we need as a country is single payer health care.
Let's be fair about it.
We need single payer health care. Obamacare or the ACA is simply, you know, it's a product of compromise, and you know what happens when you make too much compromise.
What do you think the chances are, Larry, truly, of ever getting a single-payer health care?
Oh, you guys know me well enough. I mean, as long as we have a corporately dominated government, corporately funded government, the chances are slim to none. But, you know, we have to fight for this. And it may take, you know, maybe we're hitting that come the revolution point in our nation's history where people are going to rise up and say, I've had it. You know, I want to have decent health care coverage. I want to have a retirement.
You know, with all the gridlock in Washington and all the upset by, you know, by most thinking people about politicians, has the union ever seriously considered running their own candidate?
Well,
you know,
yes.
maybe this Democrat and Republican gridlock is really hampering, you know, working people from getting ahead the way they're entitled to.
The short answer is yes, and you know the long answer is a lot more complicated because again, you know, the system that guys rightfully are you know fighting against. You know, if you start a third party, I mean, look, let's face it, the Tea Party is not a political party per se.
No.
It's funded by the Koch brothers, you know, and all these billionaires and millionaires and powerful corporations that want to hoard more wealth for themselves and screw everybody else. You know, the money and the logistics of actually having a functioning, you know, labor or progressive party, really daunting, Lila. And, you know, that's why, to the degree I'm skeptical, it's because, not because we need that alternative voice, because I would agree with you, but we've working people have suffered at the hands of both parties. You know,
oh, terribly.
E.g. NAFTA under Clinton, e.g., you know, repeal of Glass-Steagall under Clinton, you know. Dodd-Frank getting rewritten by the, you know, financial services industry that caused it. I just think we need to get, you know, I think that as long as money is allowed to pollute and corrupt the process, it's going to be really hard to counter those developments.
Well, you take a look at, you know, England, they have a very strong Labor Party. You know, you look at some European countries, and
most of them are dominated by Labor parties, and they have a very high standard of living in most of these countries, far above the United States, believe it or not.
For the ordinary person, anyway.
They have free, and the workers, you know, the workers in their unions aren't afraid to hit the streets.
That's right.
You know, when there's austerity, at these austerity programs. So the European countries do a lot of things better and smarter than we do, and you know, one of them is just fundamentally having greater respect for unions and for the workforce. I love the idea. So I want to be clear. I love the idea. I love what you're talking about. I just worry about the fact that, you know, money, corporate and ultra wealthy money has so corrupted government you're rolling a rock up this huge hill to, you know, launch and start a viable. Leo, that's why I said, you know, maybe we, you know, it will take, you know, come the revolution to, you know, wake people up and say, you know, we got to take this thing back because the system's not working for average, you know, working people who have to feed a family and, you know, have to make ends meet.
And you see a lot of suffering in the average working families today.
You do. It's
terrible.
It's shocking, you know, even among, you know, middle class unionized workers who can't keep afloat. So if union workers are having trouble, imagine what, you know, the non-union workforce. And, you know, that kind of circles back, Leo, too. You know, and I know, obviously, you're not against Obamacare or want to repeal it. It's that, you know, when you look back, we have to figure out a way strategically as a labor movement, and this is why we supported Obamacare, is that we have to, you know, we have to embrace and we have to reach out and we have to make connections to progressive-minded folks who don't have a union. Because 40 years ago, we could take the attitude of, you know, of being more, you know, insular and saying, you know, we just need to bargain better and better contracts at the table. So we supported Obamacare because we've got to do something. And certainly we need to fix it. It needs major fixes. I just personally and philosophically feel like the only real fix is having a Medicaid-style, Medicare-style plan or, you know, single payer for all.
Yeah.
Short of that, you know, you're absolutely right to raise the concerns. Obamacare is going to cause problems for unionized workers if we don't get the tweaks.
I worry that, for instance, even like in the union that I belong to over time, our members really appreciated good health care, and which is a wonderful benefit for our members. And over time, sometimes they had to trade that continued good health care in lieu of raises.
Right,
and,
exactly.
And
but now the question is they, you know, they're not going to get raises and they're going to lose their health care.
They worry.
Right.
What's the benefit here?
They worry about that.
And unfortunately, you guys are going to be hit with, or you're already hit with such uprisings over this. I mean, I just read where the longshoremen.
Longshoremen.
The 40,000 longshoremen just dropped out of the AFL-CIO because of their problems with that.
Were you aware of that, Larry?
I was. And it wasn't just, you know, it wasn't the ACA, the Affordable Care Act. I mean, that was, there's been a lot of bad blood brewing between the longshoremen and the AFL-CIO over the direction of the labor movement, over how, you know, the role they played. So it was bigger than, you know, the ACA. But, you know, but again, this didn't get reported by the media. At the same time that the longshoremen dropped out, which was reported, you know, fairly widely in the press, the United Food and Commercial Workers, which represents, you know, primarily grocery store workers, and they have nursing home workers, all kinds of workers, but predominantly in the retail sector, they reaffiliated. They left the AFL-CIO about 8 years ago as part of a breakaway group that called themselves Change to Win, they and the Teamsters. And the Teamsters have rejoined, and the food and commercial workers, who have over a million members, came back. Now, interestingly, that didn't get reported on, but the longshoremen dropping out did.
Where did the
tent needs to be bigger, you know, no doubt about it.
Where did the longshoremen go, or did they just form their own?
They're basically saying they're not going to be affiliated with the National Labor Federation. So, you know, they're a self-standing union, just like we're a self-standing union, but we choose to affiliate and participate with the National AFL-CIO. So
let me ask you this, because, you know, it's always been confounding to me. Why does the AFL-CIO exist anyway? Because you have all of these bit large unions like ASME and steelworkers and longshoremen, and I mean all of them. We're negotiating their own things that are fighting for their own badges. What is the benefit of belonging to the AFL-CIO for the average union worker?
Well, I mean, the benefit is that the AFL-CIO is, in theory and in practice, a federation of unions. So the resources that come from that are palpable and real. The AFL-CIO provides tremendous help to us here in Connecticut in terms of helping carry out our political and legislative action program, bringing unions together to make sure that good legislation gets passed and bad legislation gets defeated. So I think the AFL-CIO does some tremendous work. They also have the United Labor Agency here in Connecticut, which helps dislocated workers, both non-union and union. So there's a whole lot of things that happen that people don't see and union members don't see. So I think it's an important part of the labor movement. But, like I say, the good news kind of coming out of that convention, Leo, is that that was precise. The question you just asked was really, frankly, debated. My boss, Sal Luciano, he's the head of Council 4, he was a delegate for Connecticut AFSCME to that convention, and he came back, not just charged up, but he said that for the first time he saw in the AFL-CIO leadership, recognition that things are bad and that we need to be creative and work even harder. And, one of those creative avenues is going to be forging stronger and more durable partnerships with community groups and with, non-union organizations, even to the point where there's discussion of having, groups that aren't unionized workers per se join, like an environmental group or, the NAACP or organizations like that, to try to build to try to expand the tent. So I think there's some promising things that came out of it. And like I said, the people who I talked to who went, and from what I've read at the AFL-CIO blog, came back energized because there was a frank discussion about the future. And Leo, that's the question. And I think the good news, the best news I can give you, is that the AFL-CIO is asking that precise question of itself. And, that probably has never happened.
What are the chances, Larry? You mentioned this earlier this evening that European unions, they, to use a military term, put boots on the street.
Yep.
And maybe we in the union movement need to do more of that. Because
I agree. I just don't know that too many of our members are there yet. What do you think?
Well, I think we have to talk about it. I think there really has to be a discussion with union members about that, because if they want things to get better for working class and middle class people, they're going to have to go out on the street to make it happen.
Well, we
think
because
so.
We're in a serious position
now. We feel that way. That's why we do this show. On so many issues, but especially this show on Wednesday nights, because I don't know, Larry. I mean I tune into a whole lot of media all over the country, and I tell you, there's only a couple of places that really give you any union news at all. One is the blog itself, the union blog, and a couple of liberal sites, but you get nothing from mainstream, you get nothing nothing from any of these things, and it's extremely frustrating to see that.
Yeah.
And I share that.
I totally get that.
The guy, what's his name? Schultz there.
Ed Schultz on MSNBC.
Right.
I mean, they cut him back to what, one show a month or something now?
They reduced his, and I think we need our own, there's a handful of others who, we've been saying for 20-plus years, we should have been investing, say, pension fund money into starting up a new media enterprise. I mean, we need to do what our enemies are doing.
Do you know the Auto Workers Union? Okay, back in 2004, I believe it was, 2005, maybe 2004. They had the Auto Workers Union had a huge, a big radio broadcasting network.
Right.
All right.
Yep.
And they what happened was is they closed it down, and the reason for that was when it was so bizarre, because I'll never forget it, because we were starting our show in 2003 back in
when we met. Yep.
And we were blasting like crazy, and we found out that it was only like 84 hours a week of liberal talk shows. And there was three 1,000 hours a week of conservative talk shows.
Do you believe that? Isn't that
and that was that thing was sponsored by the Democratic Party back in 2003. You know, just to prove how there was no funding and there was no nothing for liberal talk shows. And when we started up, we were mad as hell, and we fought, and our show became quite successful in our market area because we were about the only liberal talk show going. And and we found that, and our station got
tremendous ratings. What were you going to say about the Detroit?
Well, what happened was is that at the same time we were fighting like crazy, and we were a year ahead of Air America. Okay, they hadn't even come on yet. All right, and we were fighting this, and then what happened was is all of a sudden that union thing fell apart. They dismantled their entire radio show.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Station.
Which was too bad.
Yeah.
Because it was really needed at that time.
And there was a lot of good people on that show.
And that
was one of the last that came about. And then what happened was Air America suddenly invested a whole lot of money in trying to come on gangbusters. But the problem with Air America was they put on a whole bunch of jerks who, guys like Jerry Springer, that clown, what's his name, the comedian guy. I mean, he's a senator now. He's still a clown.
Franken, Al Franken.
Yeah, but what a joke. And it's like, they had all these guys on there, and that were just jokes and got everybody more into trouble than they did anything else.
And then that suddenly folded.
And then they went bankrupt. Within, 2 years, they went bankrupt.
Yeah. And so that's why, but that's why we need to really have a strategic, almost, retrenchment, because guys have discovered with, Blog Talk Radio, it's, there are new and different and more efficient ways to reach people. But there's also, ideological issues. And I'm almost wondering sometimes, I don't know if it ought to be liberal versus conservative. I think it ought to be, workers. It ought to be the 1%. Do you believe in having a decent pay? Do you believe in having a decent health care plan and a retirement? I think we need to try to figure out how to mobilize union members and that's why, again, why I'm heartened by what the AFL-CIO acted on in terms of the resolutions.
See, we
need to form alliances.
Our major mistake going in, that we felt that being liberal. We were liberal. I know we felt that we were liberals, but what happened that after 10 years of demonization of liberalism by the media, we became like the name and not just the name, but the movement became almost absurd. The liberal movement that was left because 99% of the liberals became more or less libertarians. All right.
Yeah.
To a large degree, because they moved away from these extreme liberal movement. And I found myself, which was really funny. I was interviewing a guy who was supposed to be an ultra liberal. He wrote a book called that right after how to fight George W. Bush, that kind of thing. And bought it as a national spokesman. And he came on my show, and I had him on, and we talked. And he actually called me. After I said he was talking. Oh, what do you think about Hillary? And I said, oh God, kill me now. What do you think about this guy? What do you think about that guy? And I said, oh, this is impossible. I said, is this the best that you have? And he says, yeah. He says, this is what's happening now. John Kerry, I said, look, guys. I said, this is what I feel this way. He says, oh, Leo. He says, wow. He says, you're more liberal than I am. And I said, he says, you're more liberal than the extreme liberals. I said, no, I'm not. I said, I'm just being reasonable. I said, what you guys are trying to promote will kill us. We'll kill this country.
But getting to the idea.
And you're not going to win it against Bush with that kind of platform. You know?
But getting back to the idea of media.
And we didn't. We had four more years of Bush, and then what happened? We wound up with Obama, you know, who was just a Bush imprint, basically.
Yeah, he's been
difficult. He's got the entire Defense Department is all Bushites, all neocons.
Mm.
Isn't that frightening?
Well, but I kind of want to, what Lila originally, you know, I want to kind of get back to that question, though, which I think is a great question.
I want to go back to the idea of media.
But Lila's question also was, you know, what, in terms of the European unions are willing to kind of put boots to the ground and take to the streets, and I think that's part of it. I think, you know, media is part of it, but, you know, I think we need to mobilize our members, and I think that we need... Because we don't, you know, we're not against government. We just want government to stop serving corporate and wealthy special interests. You know,
absolutely.
We want,
oh, I agree with
and
you.
And I think that's sort of the definition of liberal, what a good liberal should be is, you know, we believe in government. And ironically, what we have now is a government that too often serves the interests of those who want to destroy us. So we've got to do something different.
Middle class and working people feel that way.
Yes.
Because that's what they've experienced.
I will say this, and I hope it doesn't, I apologize for interrupting, I just hope it doesn't come to, and it may have to come to, something that Leo said, that I've said, and that you've said, Lila, which is, you know, it's going to become the revolution. My fear, though, is that come the revolution, too many working people, you know, what they've been sort of duped in by the right wing and the Tea Party and the Koch brothers agitating against their own interests, and that's what's scary. Is that, you have union members who are gun owners screaming about losing their Second Amendment rights while their pensions are being stripped from them. And, you know, we have to figure out a way to reach those folks, if you follow what I'm saying.
I think we are in some ways, too. And
I think we also
have to look to technology to help us in a better way. I'm older, but a lot of our union members are under 40, and they are people of the technology age, and we have to use that. There have to be, you know, you have to use that in a way to reach them. That's where they get all their news. That's where they read everything, and that's where they become members of movements. I mean, you look at all the movements.
The alternative media is where everything is happening.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you're seeing...
Say that again, I'm sorry. What media you said?
Alternative media.
Like us.
Oh, alternative, yes, I agree. Yeah, I agree.
Like that.
And then that's a whole animal unto itself, because you've got to figure out ways to reach people with different messages, shorter messages, you know, things that aren't, we're not used to doing. And I'm not used to doing, you know. I'm not used to having everything reduced to something that I can see on my cell phone screen, you know.
Yeah, but, you know, if you are under 40, you know, that's what, I will work with a lot of people under 40.
You do.
40.
I know you do. And those
and
are the folks, by the way, who stand to lose their health care. So we do have
Yes. So, and we got to reach them better. But they're all on their phones. All the time.
They do.
I don't
know,
care
the way things are done.
Whether they're teachers or whether they're kids, it's the same thing. They've had the same. They have that same experience. And
not that it's a good one.
Well, it's not a bad one either.
I think it's a horrible thing.
I don't think so.
But personally, because
you know what, we can all agree on. It just is what it is. This is the
But it's such an addiction. I mean, you get $450 fines in Connecticut for texting and driving now. You know,
right.
You got 25,000 accidents a year are caused by texting. Stuff like this. It's just like, you know, it's become an addiction and it's become
it's like everything else.
Yeah.
I mean, there's the yin and yang. I mean, there's a lot of positive to technology. There's also some drawbacks. People have to learn how to create balance in their lives.
Well,
that's not the fault
of technology. You know what's really fascinating, though? You know what's really interesting? Was it Brzezinski, I think, Zbigniew, said that the alternative media stopped the bombing of Syria. Did you know that?
No.
The alternative media stopped it in its tracks. because it couldn't get any traction at that point because, there was such an outcry, okay, against Obama attacking Syria, all right, he had to go to Congress, all right. So it's like, and even now, everything that we're doing, everything that the media is saying, is being counteracted by alternative media like us because people are searching, checking out, and finding and looking at all the alternative sources and saying, hey, this isn't right. This is not right. This stinks.
Well, I think in a lot of ways people are more informed than they were.
Much more.
They're informed faster, and then they're able to act on that. And I think
that we as a
union need to capitalize on that.
I can say that just on Facebook alone, I have like about 1,400 friends on Facebook, and I get hundreds of news items every single day from these people. And some are good, some are bad, but a lot of them are just amazing that I couldn't find myself. And it's just a great source, you know what I mean, of a wealth of activist information. And, even the stuff that I found out about the AFL-CIO and the unions have come to me through Facebook, you know?
Right.
And, you know, so it's like there's so much stuff that's going on there. But the alternative media is the ultimate now. And, 90% almost, or I guess almost 80% of the news people are reading are coming from alternative media. There's only about 20%. Actually go to mainstream media for any of their news.
How does Facebook work for you? Do you get a lot of action on that, Larry?
Not enough as I'd like. We have several hundred followers, but, it's just not...
You should reach out. You should go, send out friend requests. There's so many. I'm surprised. I'm surprised you don't have more union members on that.
Well, that's it, you know. We need to get them more. So, hey, listen,
yeah.
I need to take off, guys.
Thank you for being on. And
no problem.
We'll talk again next month. And
I look forward to it. And email me, Leah. Things are looking good on that other issue we were discussing. So,
hey, and thank you so much for clarifying this Obamacare stuff too and that stuff.
Well, like I say, imperfect, but we got to try to make it better. And But
right.
I personally, I want single payer, and that's where I stand. So.
Me too. I want health care for people, so at least it's
yep.
a start.
Yep.
That's
all right, guys.
Thanks, Larry.
Thanks
Good
so
night.
Much.
Larry.
Take care.
Good night, guys.
That was Larry Dorman, Public Affairs Coordinator for
the
AFSCME Union Council for in Hartford. Now, they have they have a Facebook page.
Oh, yeah, they
do,
yeah. But he said he's only got a few hundred members.
Yeah, maybe there's something that we could do to help with that.
Well, I'm on this page.
Yeah.
A follower, and Larry went personally. But what?
John Bonner.
Invite your friends to like this page, okay? Well, you can do that. Those are my friends there. I'm going to, what I would like to do, since we just would like to take a little music break and gather our thoughts here for a minute, and we've got a lot of interesting news to cover tonight, let's go to a...
Party groups in 2011. the IRS did not return a request for comment on the nature of Lerner's negotiations with investigators.
So, I mean, she's in tough shape there. Yeah. Let's see here. This was her first testimony in May 23rd when she got into that trouble. We'll forget about it. They always throw these damn commercials in on these things. I can't. It's such a waste of time.
Well, this is kind of scary. Kerry set to sign gun-grabbing UN
this
treaty.
This is pretty sad. He's doing it today, actually. He signed it today. This must have been yesterday. I've got another article on this.
Billy Collar News Foundation. Kerry set to sign gun-grabbing UN treaty.
Terrible page.
Secretary of State John Kerry will sign the United Nations Arms Trade Treaty on Wednesday. That's today.
Yeah,
the
yeah,
State
let,
Department.
Let me get
okay.
A more current one, because I have that.
I don't like that. Not that I own a gun, I even want a gun.
Yeah.
The senator's opposition.
Yeah. Kerry signed it. this was dated yesterday, but he did sign it today.
Secretary of State John Kerry plans to sign a controversial UN treaty on arms regulation on Wednesday, a senior state official, department official told Fox News, despite warnings from lawmakers that the Senate will not ratify the agreement. A state official said the treaty would reduce the risk that international transfers of conventional arms will be used to carry out the world's worst crimes while protecting gun rights. The treaty builds on decades of cooperative efforts to stem the international illegal and illicit trade in conventional weapons that benefits terrorists and rogue agents, the official said.
The lawmakers, though, have long claimed that the treaty could lead to new gun control measures. Senator Jim Inhofe,
Republican of Oklahoma, one of the most vocal opponents of the treaty, sent a letter to Kerry declaring it dead in the water since a majority of senators have gone on record against the agreement. The administration is wasting precious time trying to sign away our laws to the global community and unelected UN bureaucrats, he wrote. Kerry, who was in New York attending the UN General Assembly session, announced earlier this year that the administration planned to sign the treaty. The treaty would require countries that ratify it to establish national regulations to control the transfer of conventional arms and components and to regulate arms brokers, but it will not explicitly control the domestic use of weapons in any country. Still, gun rights supporters on Capitol Hill warned the treaty could be used as the basis for additional gun regulations inside the U.S. and have threatened not to ratify. Over the summer, 130 members of Congress signed a letter to President Obama and Kerry urging them to reject the measure for this and for other reasons.
And obviously they didn't.
No.
They don't listen to Congress. They don't listen to the people.
No.
All they listen to is their overlords at the U.N. and the New World Order.
Yeah, the Congress has no input. They don't do anything that Congress wants.
Yeah. What impact the treaty will have in curbing the estimated $60 billion global arms trade remains to be seen. The UN treaty will take effect after 50 countries ratify it, and a lot will depend on which ones ratify and which ones don't, and how stringently it is implemented. The Control Arms Coalition, which includes hundreds of non-governmental organizations, there's more than 100 countries that promoted an arms trade treaty, has said it expects many of the world's top arms exporters, including Britain and France, to sign along emerging exporters such as Brazil and Mexico. It said the United States is expected to sign later this year. The coalition notes that more than 500,000 people are killed by arms violence every year, and predicted that history will be made when many UN members sign the treaty, which it says is designed to protect millions living in daily fear of armed violence and at risk of rape, assault, and so on. Well, you know, that's all well and good, but it's on the local level. It's not on the massive arms level where you know,
yeah.
You got like the Carlyle Group, you know, George Bush's company, you know, is the largest arms dealer in the world, all right?
Yeah, do they mention anything about that?
No, in their illegal trades and so on. Of course, they're not gonna prove that. But the thing is that it doesn't affect that aspect of it, all right? They're talking out of both sides of their mouths, saying, "Oh, everybody's dying and getting killed in arms problems. Let's sign this treaty." But that treaty, from what we know of it, okay, is just disallowing foreign and major arms deals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't stop the local illegal arms deals. Okay. I wanted to talk about this one with Larry, and it's a good time to bring it up tonight. But I didn't get a chance to mention it. But what happens with the AFL-CIO? We read this. I think we read this last night. I just wanted to mention it one more time. But the AFL-CIO shrugs off the Detroit bankruptcy.
That bothered me.
Yeah,
I meant to talk to Larry about that.
The AFL has responded to the bankruptcy of the city of Detroit with a predictable combination of rhetorical appeals to the Obama administration and a refusal to lift a finger to actually defend the interests of the working class. The union bureaucrats, enjoying six-figure salaries and guaranteed and lavish pensions, are separated by a vast social distance from the city employees and residents of Detroit. They could scarcely disguise their indifference to the social counter-revolution being inflicted on the workers, who are compelled to pay dues to these pro-corporate organizations. I mean, you know, we read this last night. I won't continue it tonight. But the problem is that over the past 35 years, the unions have been transformed from defensive organizations of the working class, albeit in the grips of a right-wing bureaucracy, into corporatist organizations that serve only the interests of the privileged stratum of the upper middle class that controls them. The moribund character of the official labor movement is shown most starkly in the AFL-CIO's own membership figures. The percentage of workers and unions dropped in 2012 by the largest amount in 6 years, from 11.8% to 11.3%. And the average age of a union member has risen from 38 to 45 over the past quarter century. As workers in Detroit and other cities begin to wage battles against the attacks on their jobs, wages, pensions, and other benefits, they will find that the AFL-CIO an implacable enemy. The first step in carrying out a successful struggle is a complete break with these reactionary organizations and the building of new fighting organizations in the working class.
Mm.
Boy, and you know,
well, I think they're recognizing that people, Larry said
they recognize what's happened.
I hope they can do something about it.
We have to reach out. We have to do this. We have to do more of this. We have to do more of that. But it's like, you know, all they're saying is, guys, you know, your union membership is getting older. You know, it's like you and I. It's like people like us. We're
on the way out.
You know, it's the people in their 20s and 30s and 40s. Those are the people, all right, that still got, you know, most of their life ahead of them, you know.
That's right.
Most of their working life ahead of them that need the protections. And those are the people that are being sucked into part-time positions and no benefits and no union protections and no nothing. They're saying, well, where the hell is the unions? Why aren't the unions coming and helping us? And that's the problem that we have, folks. And it's a real divide. And it's exactly what these goddamn corporations and companies want to have happen. They want to strip everybody of this stuff. And that's why Obamacare is such a frightening proposal, because it allows these manufacturers, it allows these companies, all companies, to get rid of, you know, of that, all right?
Get rid of what?
Get rid of their health care program,
mm-hmm.
all right? And throw everybody on Obamacare, all right? And even companies over 50 employees, I was listening to Obama today talking about it, companies over 50, with 50 employees or more, are going to get substantial credits, okay, to providing by the government to provide
health care,
okay, to their employees, all right? So that, you know, but even with those substantial credits, all right, they may decide to just go part-time for all their employees and drop them all out, and they'll just go above it. They don't have to pay anything. Not a damn dime, okay, into that. So, you know, their profits will soar while the working guy will get nothing, okay?
Yeah.
But the working guy, where he may have gotten free coverage, okay?
No, nobody gets free health care anymore.
Well, even partial, right?
You have
to pay. Now he's going to have to pay totally for it, you know. So it's like, it's going to be a lot cheaper. Well, maybe a lot cheaper, but you don't know what your coverage is.
My fear is the only people it's going to be cheaper for is corporations.
Oh, yeah.
Who are now, the health care is subsidized by the government.
Yeah.
But they won't pay their workers anymore.
No, they're not going to raise their rate.
And it'll allow them to compete with...
China
and
yeah.
the European Union.
Well,
but
the European Union, the only reason they are competitive is because they don't have to pay health insurance.
That's
costs.
What I'm saying.
You know,
that's the only reason they're competitive. That's what I'm saying, Leo.
But they're
the
also
only,
paying people a lot
but
more
they're,
money. Yeah.
This is the point that I just made. That's the point that I made. They need to raise the salaries of people.
Yeah.
They can't just keep it all for themselves, but that's what American corporations are
exactly
doing, and that's what the government is allowing them to
that's
do.
Exactly
so now
right.
the government is going to subsidize their health care, and they'll take that
yeah.
and go with that, and still people won't be paid
sure,
more.
They still won't get any more. Yeah, exactly.
And that's what my fear is about all of it. I wish I had articulated that to Larry, but that's my fear.
Larry's in a bad spot.
That's my fear.
Yeah, that Larry's in a really
because
bad. Because I tried to say that. Where what does this lead us to? We just go nowhere. And,
well, he wants single player like I do. He always has.
That's all he can say, and I am the same way. But the problem is that we're up against a rock and a hard place with these corporations. And as long
and
as
they've managed to screw us over all along.
Yeah, as long as big money buys the politicians, we can't control it. You know, and unions don't have enough money to buy them
to
all.
To match those people.
Exactly.
No.
So, you know, we're stuck, folks. And that's the nature of our beef here tonight. And it's just a bad situation all the way around. You know, I saw this today. I was really pleased to see this. Warren sent this over to me.
Oh.
But I was really kind of surprised because I didn't know. MIT publishes virtually all of its course material online for free. You can take hundreds of college courses completely free in your own time.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. That's pretty cool, isn't it? Yeah. MIT puts all their course materials online, all their books and everything, their textbooks. And
really? Go to it. Let's see what it says.
Well, that's all it says.
No, there's an arrow.
Now, this just goes to another picture.
Oh.
Now, this is just a picture.
Oh.
But I thought it was really, I just so you knew that, I thought it was, some things are free in life. And here's another one. We're not saying, now this is the Obama spokesman, this guy, I've never heard such a schmuck in my life. But he says, we're not saying that killing innocent people is right. We're saying it's right when the government does it. Just for collateral, you know,
we've heard that before.
What do they call it? Collateral damage.
Yeah, we've heard that before.
Oh, yeah.
State-sponsored genocide, we hear from people, is just fine.
Yeah.
Not in my book. A murder is a murder, whether you do it by drone, whether you do it by chemical weapon, whether you do it by a nuclear bomb, whether you do it by a rifle, whatever you do it by, it's still killing somebody.
Here's just one more.
You have the right to do
this. We have time to it, maybe. An article that says...
it's from the Daily Cost.
Yeah, hang on a second.
The labor one?
Yeah. It says, Republican bill would kick 170,000 veterans off of food stamps. Yeah.
It's bad enough
that veterans have got to be on food stamps. Okay,
it's bad enough they were sucked into going in the first place, probably because they were poor.
Thursday's House vote to cut the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program by $40 billion over 10 years proved once again, that when the Republicans drive to demonize poor people and comes into conflict with the supposed Republican reverence for veterans, demonizing poor people wins. The bill would kick 170,000 veterans off of food stamps out of about 900,000 veterans in the program. Republican rhetoric was that the food stamp slashing bill would continue food assistance for the virtuous poor, children, seniors, disabled people, employed people, and only cut assistance for able-bodied adults who don't want to work, preferring to live high on the hog off their average benefit of $4 a day. That's false in ways almost too numerous to count. The bill contains no provisions for people who can't work.
Can't find work in an economy where there are three job seekers for every available job. Republicans claimed unemployed people could fulfill the bill's works requirements by turning to job training programs, yet many people don't have access to job training programs and the bill did not fund them. The bill would kick 2.1 million, mostly working or elderly people, out of SNAP by eliminating expanded categorical eligibility. On paper, these people's incomes or assets are above the SNAP threshold, even though in reality they face significant expenses like child care in order to keep working, bringing them below the threshold. Oh, God, makes you sick.
I just wanted to, there's one more, we just ran over time, but I wanted to mention this tonight because we won a major victory. All the people that were against Monsanto, the Monsanto Protection Act, the Senate just ended that, all right?
Yay.
Yeah, which is, where is it? I just posted it.
Most people probably didn't. Great news. Yeah. Anti-Monsanto movement wins against Monsanto Protection Act.
It's not a big article, but it's effective.
Nation of Change.
Senate to kill Monsanto Protection Act amid outrage. All right? In a majority victory brought upon by serious activism and public outrage, new legislation changes will shut down the Monsanto Protection Act rider that granted Monsanto protection from legal action and was set to renew on September 30th.
This unprecedented move shows the true power of the anti-GMO, anti-Monsanto movement and how elected officials are now being forced to side with the concerned population over the money-spewing Monsanto. After all, it was Monsanto who purchased its way into the initial Senate spending bill legislation via a rider dubbed the Monsanto Protection Act through Senator Roy Blunt. Officially labeled the Farmer Assurance Provision under Section 735 of the Senate Continuing Resolution Spending Bill, Senator Blunt was conveniently given over $64,000 by Monsanto before he handed the biotech corporation the ability to write its own legislation for the Monsanto Protection Act. And as I told you back in March, on the front lines of the anti-GMO activism, the financial payload dished out by Monsanto was enough to secure a major victory for corporations over both the public and even the federal government. It was last March that Obama signed the initial Senate spending bill into law, subsequently bringing the Monsanto Protection Act rider into legal validity as well. But the rider only extended until September 30th this year, and it was up to Monsanto to pull another slippery legislative trick out of their sleeves in order to pass a Monsanto Protection Act 2.0 renewal. Once again, however, Monsanto executives underestimated the power of the alternative news community and the intelligence of those who do not want to eat contaminated food. And as a result, senators are being forced to respond in a big way. As one senator put it, the provision will be gone, said Senator Mark Pryor, Democrat, Arkansas. And it goes on.
They're backtracking, they're taking it out, and we're thankful to God that they are.
Yeah.
So I want to thank everybody for joining us. We want to thank Larry Dorman and Aspen Union,
our special guest for
coming in tonight. And we hope you, if you're in a union, we hope you continue to support it and help it and get as much information on you as can. So, you know, to make it
and talk to your other union members.
Talk to your other union members and tell them that we have a show every Wednesday night right here that talks about unions and union issues. So
We thank you very much for listening.
And also check out your AFL-CIO blog. That'll give you a lot of updates on.
And once again, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.
Right.
Good night, folks.
Join me tomorrow night, too, folks. I do another.